İzmet Çelo Baramovic.
تبلوا بالقليل من القليل تبلوا بالقليل من القليل وهي الزاد للسفر الطويل وهي الزاد للسفر الطويل تبلوا بالقليل من القليل تبلغ بالقليل من القليل وهي الزاد للسفر الطويل وهي الزاد للسفر الطويل وطاعته غنى الدارين فالزم وطاعته غنى الدارين فالزم وفيها العز للعبد الذليل وفيها العز للعبد الذليل تبلغ بالقليل من القليل تبلغ بالقليل من القليل وهي الزاد للسفر الطويل وهي الزاد للسفر الطويل وفي عصيانه عار ونار وفي عصيانه عار ونار وفي البعد مع خزي وبيل وفي البعد.
İzmet Çelo Baramovic was born in Sarajevo on the 26th of April 1966. His nickname, Çelo, İzmet was sentenced to 11 years in jail. He was sent to the infamous Zenica prison. Out of the 11 years he was sentenced to, Çelo served 6 and he was released in 1991, becoming the godfather of Sarajevo. When he exited jail, he started to work as a debt collector for the bosses of the underground in Sarajevo. And you really didn't want to avoid payment to him, since the police were on his side. And let's just say he was a gifted torturer and a demolitionist. There are stories of nightclub owners not wanting to give him his share of the pie, and his men professionally disassembling the building. What Bajramovic told his men to destroy had to look like a quarry after the action. He rapidly rose through the ranks of the mob to become the most powerful criminal in Sarajevo at that time. The 90s in Yugoslavia were a very dark decade, marked by ethnic wars from 1991 to 2001. İzmet joined the military and actually helped the defenders, especially in two decisive battles for Sarajevo. The first one was on May 2, 1992, in the battle for the presidency of Bosnia and Herzegovina. They fought in Skenderija, against the special forces of the JNA from Nis. The other battle was just 2 weeks later on May 16, 1992, the Battle of Pofalic. Because of his heroic deeds in the two decisive battles, Çelo became a commandant for the Sarajevo military police and his two friends became deputies. Criminal groups were the first to enter the military forces and defend against the siege of Sarajevo. They were not too keen to protect the city from the attackers. They rather wanted to protect their criminal territory. And under the veil of war and the military uniforms, it was very easy to profit, especially as a head of the military police. At the beginning of 1993, he was dismissed from the position of the military police chief. Unfortunately for Çelo, he couldn't profit for long because he was almost fatally wounded. In the fall of 1993, he was shot by a Serbian sniper. The shot barely missed his heart, and he had to be evacuated from the city and couldn't return to the war until 1997. He didn't sit with his arms crossed. He tried acting in his downtime. Çelo appeared in an episode of the PBS program during that time. He also gave interviews for Vanity Fair and the New York Times. After the wars ended, a lot of 90s mobsters were either dead, in the prosecution, or made their way into politics. Çelo, on the other hand, continued his life of crime. He was arrested multiple times for a variety of charges, but was ultimately set free. A few weeks after the murder occurred, and Çelo, as the leader, was sentenced to 20 years in prison. But after almost 5 years behind bars, his conviction was overturned and he was free again. Death. Remember the sniper wound to the heart? Well, due to that injury and his unhealthy lifestyle, his health began to rapidly decline. Inhumane prisons in Bosnia at the time didn't help either. On the 17th of December 2008, shocking news appeared in Yugoslavia. İzmet Çelo Bajramovic, the godfather of Sarajevo, former chief of the military police, to some a criminal and to some a hero, was found dead in his apartment due to suicide. He had shot himself in the temple of the eye with a pistol, but unofficially, his rapidly declining health was said to be the motive. He always cared for himself and didn't want to die as a sick old man. He wanted to go on his own terms with the ringleaders of organized crime and some murders. Of course, no one wants to talk about all this publicly. And whether the stories circulating in Sarajevo are true still stays unknown.
Well, I hooked up with an individual that I inspired to be like. When you watch some of the other Goodfellas and you hear about Al Capone, this individual was the closest resemblance to those people, and I wanted to be the top of that lifestyle. And he took great care of me. He took me into his home, his many homes. He showed me around and said, pick one. And I saw the lifestyle he had, that country. Basically, it was his. And he was someone who you didn't want to cross. And he was respected. And I took to him, and we were very close.
Eddie returned to Chicago from Bosnia with a new understanding of the world.
And the same way he demanded respect and loyalty, this is something that I demanded. And if I didn't get, then I took. And I put fear in people the same way he was doing.
Influenced by his father's work in the club industry, Eddie naturally began to seek out that path.
We worked for one of the largest promoters in Chicago. Eddie worked for him and I worked for him as well. Eddie was one of the guys, one of the enforcers. He used to run around, basically just beat up people. That was really Eddie's nature and his essence. Eddie was also a ladies' man. Eddie brought in a lot of the ladies. At any given moment, he could have 7 to 8 women that are running around the club looking for him.
While all of this was happening, Eddie, who loved to fight, found a new form of release in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
You know, there's 24 hours in a day, but it seemed like for 25 hours he was training. You know, he was researching, training, sparring, just, you know, was in love with it.
Jiu-Jitsu, you know, changed him, you know.
But Jiu-Jitsu wasn't enough to keep Eddie away from the cooler lifestyle.
I know Eddie's presence was very significant in the club. Everybody knew Eddie when he was dating one of the hottest girls in the city. He decided to get a Harley, a chopper, 430, a nice new Mercedes.
As the cool became common, Eddie began to have a new sense of life.
We were about 6 months into owning this nightclub together. We were probably drinking 6 nights a week because we were at the bar all the time. So as training went down, the amount of women went up. And Eddie, I think to this day, may look at it God's way of kind of saying, yeah, you're having fun, but this isn't the way you're supposed to be having fun.
All the power he possessed still made him feel helpless.
As strong as he is and as intimidating as he is as an individual, it really didn't matter. There was no peace.
The glamorous life Eddie had been living felt shallow and empty. There was no peace of mind.
Initially, when we met, Eddie seemed pretty perfect. The perfect lifestyle, all the women, all the cars, tough guy, he can do anything he wants to do, runs around with his head up. But as I got to know him, it seemed flawed. There was things missing. His physical being was great for his ego, but it left him empty.
Feeling lost, Eddie started searching for answers. It didn't take long before Eddie was reminded of death.
I was in Brazil. I was maybe a week from coming home, and I was talking to my brother on the phone. And then he asked me a question on Islam, like, did you read this book?
He wanted to make sure himself and inside his heart that that was the truth.
When my brother first started to learn Islam, he was so enthusiastic.
It wasn't about forcing people to change. Eddie's newly acquired knowledge allowed him to see life in a very different way.
So he started less and less going to the club. He'll go to his parties but leave, like be there for an hour and leave. Sometimes he wouldn't even show up and just have me and someone else run it. He kind of like wanted to talk to people about Islam, but then he was kind of being a hypocrite because he was in the scene, and I think it forced him more to get out of it.
Eddie had stopped drinking at this point. Me and Eddie used to drink a lot. Eddie used to drink maybe more than me. At that point, Eddie had quit drinking. This over a 2-3 month time period. He was praying 5 times a day. He was doing a lot of reading, a lot of studying on Islam.
Giving up the old lifestyle proved to be a real struggle for Eddie. But determined as he was, he quickly adapted to the situation.
That first episode of that show aired, I think that's when you saw the full formation come into hope. This guy's changed. What's going on here?
The Dean Show, combined with his passion for jiu-jitsu, has made Eddie achieve goals he never thought possible. Eddie's purpose with the Dean Show was to enlighten people who might be in a similar condition as he was in the past.
It is good for him to make up for all those times that he missed doing what is right. So, you know, and he probably realizes that. That's why he's working extra hard, you know. So.
Eddie continues his struggle to help people find a way that has been lost to them. For he himself is an example of redemption. He is living proof that if one puts his or her mind to it, they can achieve anything.
If you want to do it and you have a willpower, you can do it. And if you have some support and some guidance, it is possible.
Being part of the biggest family of martial arts with over a few hundred students and the Dean Show, man, it's a lot of work. He's a machine, you know.
If someone who knew Eddie in his youth, they would maybe predict that he'd be dead or he'd be in jail or he'd be definitely in the negative side of life, you know. But to see someone change, to see that their whole their character changes, to see their these you know countless changes, positive changes in their life, it's a sign of God. Allah give us Jannah. Amen. Give Jannah to my mother. Amen. Give Jannah to my father. Amen. Give Jannah to my sister. Amen. Give Jannah to my brother. Amen. Allah take us higher. Amen. Allah take us higher. Amen. Allah save us from the fire. Amen. Allah save us from the fire. Amen. Have mercy on us. Amen. Have mercy on us. Amen. Have mercy on us. Have mercy on us on judgment day.